Welcome back. It's a Tuesday, the 19th day of February, 2019. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and I've started to notice something. That is, on the days after the days when major treason is revealed at the national level, even though the waste stream tries to ignore it and pretend instead it's a hero speaking out about all the evil that's being done by constitutional processes, the waste stream news at least tends to get pretty quiet, or focus on really important things like Hollywood. Well, while that's clearly the case today, it does mean there are some really interesting things we'll talk about that you're probably not going to hear on criminally negligent networks. And in some cases, you may hear about them, but you shouldn't trust them. Case in point, another Weekend at Bernie's rerun, although this time, of course, it's Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Is she alive or not? Well, the New York Times will certainly tell you that she is, along with the WAPO, but have they ever lied to us before? The official narrative, courtesy of the Gray Lady, and that's especially apropos today, said that Ginsburg returned to the Supreme Court back to work on Friday. Just like the WAPO tried to convince us a few weeks back that she attended a local Washington play. Although nobody saw her, nobody was even allowed to take pictures, and of course there weren't any. Aha, though, this time the New York Times did have a picture. It was titled, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg Returned to the Supreme Court on Friday. Trouble is, as Jordan Sather and the Gateway Pundit point out, yeah, which Friday? The photo was actually taken back in November. And come on, by now you'd think they'd at least have been able to come up with a decent body double. So is she alive or not? But we do know that if she wasn't, they're not about to tell us, especially since they think they're this close to getting rid of Trump. Bottom line, folks, I don't know. And neither does anybody else that we know to trust. And come to think of it, almost all of the ones that we don't are still whining about getting caught when it came to Jussie Smollett. So it makes sense to follow that story up with this one, which is at least making waves nationwide, although it comes from across the pond, about CBS News chief foreign correspondent and former, I guess, 60 Minutes reporter Lara Logan, who slammed what she called the mostly liberal media for its coverage of Trump. She calls it a distortion of real life, and as the paper puts it, the award-winning CBS journalist admits she's committing professional suicide by coming out and telling people the truth. During an appearance on the Mic Drop podcast with retired Navy SEAL Mike Ritlin, the veteran journalist admitted that, quote, the media everywhere is mostly liberal, not just the U.S., adding that it was nearly impossible for viewers to decipher if they were being told the truth at any given time. Quote, 85% of journalists, she said, are registered Democrats, unquote. If you actually exclude the ones who aren't really journalists at all, folks, maybe that number gets quite a bit more reasonable looking. Anyway, she continued, how do you know you're being lied to? How do you know you're being manipulated? How do you know there's something not right with the coverage? Well, when they simplify it all and there's no gray, it's all one way. Life, she said, isn't like that. If it doesn't match real life, it's probably not. Something's wrong. For example, all the coverage on Trump all the time is negative. And that, she said, is a distortion of the way things go in real life. There's no gray. It's all one way. She went on to say that journalists today are more or less lobbyists for leftist interest, adding that the weight of the liberal news media machine overwhelms, quote, the other side, unless people actively seek out other outlets, such as Breitbart. And noting recent comments by former New York Times executive editor Jill Abramson, Logan said, although the media has historically always been left-leaning, we've abandoned our pretense, or at least the effort, to be objective today. We've become political activists, and some could argue propagandists, and there's some merit to that. And she wasn't done. She added that MSM reports using anonymous or single government sources are bunk, saying, quote, that's not journalism, it's horseshit. Responsibility for fake news begins with us, unquote. The South African-born foreign affairs journalist achieved some notoriety in 2013, and not necessarily for a good reason, when she did a report for 60 Minutes about the 2012 attacks on the U.S. diplomatic compound in Benghazi, along with the assassination of the ambassador. And imagine this, her eyewitness evidently later told a different story to the FBI than he'd told her. CBS, it says, conducted a review of the matter and found that other media outlets like the New York Times and the WAPO were reporting things differently. So after she was targeted by Media Matters for America, infamous leftist fact-checkers, or as she put it, the known Clinton propaganda organization, she was forced to take a leave of absence from CBS. And I did find her summary of the fact that there isn't much variety in viewpoints when it comes to the major waste stream news organizations kind of telling. Here's how she put it. Visually, anyone who's ever been to Israel and been to the Wailing Wall has seen that the women have this tiny little spot in front of the wall to pray, and the rest of the wall is for the men, she said. To me, that's a great representation of the American media, in that in this tiny little corner where the women pray, you've got Breitbart and Fox News and a few others. And from there on, you have CBS, ABC, NBC, HuffPo, Politico, whatever, right? All of them. And that, she said, is a problem for me. My experience has been that the more opinions you have, the more ways you look at everything in life, unquote. Well, basically, the closer you get to the truth. Because everything, she said, is gray, right? Well, folks, not on the leftist media. Even if it's green on the outside, like a watermelon, it's red to the core. And why don't we follow that up with just a couple of examples of the left praising its own? Here's one from the HollywoodReporter.com, probably about the last place I would normally go. But it's an award story by Bret Easton Ellis. Never heard of the guy. But he says, in a guest column, quote, "The year the Oscars finally got gay right." Do you think just for a second he means they went to Scripture and said that a man lying with a man as with a woman is an abomination that carries the death penalty? No, hardly. Here's what it says instead. Quote, "A record of 7 out of 20 nominated roles are for LGBTQETC characters in 2019, and there's not a tortured coming out story, dreary AIDS death, or noble martyrdom among them." Yes, here's the stat, begins this guy. 4.5% of Americans prefer same-sex partners. "I'm included," he says. That's if we're to believe the consensus of various studies. Google it. Yeah, oh yeah, that'll prove it. And this is the percentage that usually pops up. And of course that means whether it's true or not, folks, that's what they want you to believe. It's harder to prove or disprove compared with the U.S. 2017 census, which tells us definitively, for example, that 13% of the population is African American, 18% is Latino, blah-de-blah. All of that means that we are overrepresented at the Oscars this year in terms of the number of gay or bisexual characters played by nominated actors. A record 7 out of 20, and we've come a long way, baby. So by that, I guess he means, yeah, Hollywood is 99%+ PC. And if you're not, they don't let you into the red carpet area anyway. Okay, well, that is certainly more than enough of that. So let's go on to the Brookings Institution, brookings.edu. For some propaganda of an entirely different kind, in a feature called Tech Tank, a piece written by Tom Wheeler, who served as the 31st chairman of the Federal Communications Commission at the end of the Obama regime. It's actually dated a couple of months back, but hey, it keeps getting recycled. And are you ready for the misleading, even propaganda-oriented headline? "The real 5G race," he says, "is to serve all Americans." Well, take your own service and stick it where the sun don't shine, Tom. Some of us would rather live than watch movies faster. It begins this way, and I won't read much of it, don't worry. He talked about a September White House rally to promote U.S. leadership in the fifth generation 5G wireless technology. I was part of a similar event at the Clinton White House, you know, Rape Central, in 1993, that promoted the importance of making more spectrum available through auctions that were then being considered by Congress. This time around, it looks like the messaging will be concerning the 5G race between the United States and China. And it goes on to talk about how important the race is and all the billions, even trillions of dollars that are at stake. The first thing to know, he said, about 5G, and this is a partial whopper, because it's really not the first thing, but it goes with it, is that the Obama FCC made the United States the first nation in the world to set aside high-band millimeter wave spectrum for 5G applications. Military weapons applications, of course, seem to have preceded that. He goes on to tell us about all the companies that are rolling out this poison in multiple cities throughout this year and the next. But no, trouble is, you don't transition to a new generation of technology immediately. Simply flip a switch and go from one generation to the next. These things must be done delicately. They're evolutionary. So here I'll pause and mention just two things. One, the word health doesn't appear in this story, nor does any indication whatsoever that there might be any little problem with rolling out this 5G weaponry, and that's what it is, all across America and the world. Or for that matter, any downside whatsoever. But there is this. The true national leadership challenge, he writes, for 5G is less a race, he puts it in quotes, than whether its benefits will be available to all Americans. Ubiquitous 5G is a national cause worth fighting for. Some of us folks will fight for the death against it because that's what we're talking about. But hey, back to this stuff. But it will require more than industry and government lip service. The 5G deployments announced thus far are in urban and suburban areas. Large parts of rural America, though, are still waiting for 4G LTE, despite government subsidies to companies to encourage such expansion. What's missing, he said, in the U.S. is a race to deliver 5G to all Americans, whether we want it slammed down our throats and irradiating our bodies, I think, or not. But back to the quote here, to accomplish universal 5G, we must replace expedient political battle cries with creative thinking by both government and industry to maximize scarce capital, maintain competition, and deliver the promise of high-speed, low-latency 5G service to every American, unquote, whether they like it or not, whether they don't want it in their house or their neighborhood or not, and whether they know what's good for them or not. Let me be as blunt as I can here, and that's fairly blunt, folks, as you know. If we can't trust them to tell us the truth about the Constitution or what's being done to destroy it at multiple levels, they certainly won't tell you about glyphosates, mercury in vaccines, or genetically modified frankenfoods, much less whether or not an anti-constitutional so-called justice like Ruth Bader Ginsburg is even alive or not. Why would we trust them to tell us the truth about a so-called wonderful technology that might end up making all of us a lot deader than she is? Oh, and one last speculation on this idea of politically correct news coverage that can't be trusted at all. Notice how they're really hot to trot when it comes to disarming Americans. It's all for the children, you know. We can't have these dangerous devices pointed at our little kiddies now, can we? But we certainly want to point all kinds of dangerous devices right in their homes where they sleep. Hell, let's irradiate them 24/7 with millimeter wavelengths. Anybody that has any concern at all about weaponry ought to be a lot more concerned about fully automatic 5G death. They don't even have to reload, than the kind that just might protect you and your neighbors from what they intend to do to you. So here comes the speculation. Just imagine if somebody took one of those military 5G, the one I saw the technical specs for, operated at 95 gigahertz, they said, active denial weapons systems into a populated area, oh, I don't know, like a public school or shopping mall, and beamed down a few hundred innocent people. Do you think maybe somebody'd get the message and say, hey, we don't want this thing on every street corner and in every house? Nah, the press wouldn't report on it anyway. This next item is a story that I've been thinking about for several days. Turns out a real journalist named Andy Ngo put the whole list together for me, and it was up on Zero Hedge the other day, under the title, Giant List of Mainstream Media-Fueled Hate Crime Hoaxes Meant to Frame Trump Supporters. Yep, you want the definitive story of at least most of the waste stream hoaxes that have been perpetrated over just the last couple of years? Here you go. As Brian Stelter and CNN Work Overtime begins the summary here of all of these tweets via Tyler Durden, to pretend that the MSM didn't uncritically promote Jussie Smollett's absurd hate crime claim in a giddy rush to frame Trump supporters as violent, journalist Andy Ngo has pushed back. In a running thread of hate crime hoaxes that the MSM either uncritically reported or gave little attention to once the actual truth came out, Ngo lists hoax after hoax designed to smear conservatives. So here you go. in basically the order he published them, dating back the better part of about 2.5 years. Right after Donald Trump's election, the SPLC, he says, really stoked panic. A pro-gay Episcopal church in Indiana was vandalized with, quote, Heil Trump, a swastika, and an anti-gay slur. Turns out that, too, was the gay organ player who done it. He was charged, though, only with a misdemeanor. Then, from 2018, days after the Pittsburgh massacre, Trump supporters were blamed for Nazi vandalism at a Brooklyn synagogue and fires in a Jewish community. Turns out, hey, what do you expect? Again, the perpetrator was a gay black man who had worked with the city council on a supposed initiative to fight hate crimes. Well, there you have it. One more time, we see the ends really do, at least in some eyes, justify the means. And for each of these, he cites the appropriate local news coverage. Then from February 17th of this year, Andy Ngo says, 1 week before the presidential election, a black church in Mississippi was burned via an arson attack while Vote Trump was written on the building. After much panic, an investigation revealed the man responsible, church member Andrew McClinton, who, yes, remember, this was a black church, so he probably isn't the poster child for right-wing white male extremism. In November 16, continues the list, a Muslim student at the University of Louisiana said that two white racist, say it with me, Trump supporters brutally assaulted her, ripped off her hijab, and robbed her. The story, of course, went viral, and of course, it was a lie. Media never identified her by name after the hoax was revealed. Next, I remember, says Ngo, that Trump and his supporters were blamed for a spate of anti-Semitic KKK and Nazi graffiti on the campus of Nassau Community College in Long Island in late 2016. The student responsible turns out to have been Jaskirat Saini. December 2016, a Muslim woman said she was attacked by three white male Trump supporters in New York City, on the subway, who, of course, tried to rip off her hijab. Yasmin Saweed lied. Care, though, said Muslims are under tremendous stress and pressure, resulting in incidents just like this. Going back to September 2018, a black woman in Long Island said Trump supporters confronted her, told her, quote, she didn't belong here. Her car tire was slashed the next day, and a hateful note was left saying, go home. Turns out, Adwoa Lewis made up the whole story. And he quotes NBC New York, local coverage there. In November 2018, students at Goucher College demanded social justice training and safe spaces after, you know, racist Nazi and KKK graffiti was found on campus. Someone even wrote out the names of black students. Trump, of course, was blamed. Instead, a black student named Finn Arthur was responsible. 2017, at St. Olaf College, mass protests roiled the campus in response to anti-black notes found all over the place. Class was canceled, the administration caved to demands, and an investigation found that Samantha Wells, a black victim of one of the notes, actually fabricated the entire incident. November 2016, a Philadelphia neighborhood was rattled when property was vandalized with pro-Trump and anti-black messages. William Tucker was identified as that vandal through closed-circuit TV footage. And no, folks, he doesn't look white male. November 2016, a black female student at Villanova in Pennsylvania said a group of white men yelling Trump knocked her to the ground on campus. However, a police and university investigation was halted because the student decided, she didn't want to pursue the matter. November 2017, at K-State University, a black man's car was vandalized with racist messages, class was canceled, students held demonstrations, Dontarius Williams later admitted that he did it to his own car. Hey folks, if it's racist to speculate about why somebody of a certain color did something, is it also racist to speculate why somebody of another color doesn't get charged? Well, in any case, for whatever reason, this guy didn't get charged. In autumn 2018 at K-State, a note was left on an apartment, too, that said, beware, N-persons, you know the word, folks, and I'm not going to say it, knock at your own risk. The victim admitted to police that he did it to himself. And that was the second time that the same she-he person had fabricated a hate incident in less than 2 years. Meanwhile, at the University of Michigan, student Haley Bass told police a Trump supporter, who else, attacked her by scratching her face. In November 2016, she said she was targeted for wearing a pin in support of UK Remain. As her story fell apart, she admitted she'd scratched herself. Then there was the spate of death threats to Jewish community centers across the U.S. Trump, of course, was blamed, but instead, Juan Thompson, a reporter who worked for The Intercept, was convicted for the hoax, threats, and other offenses. And no, he doesn't look like a white male either. Andy Ngo, of course, actually includes the pictures along with the links, so that if there's any doubt, you can decide for yourself, just in case you're curious. 2016, another Muslim student, this time at the University of Michigan, claims she was attacked by a white man who threatened to burn her hijab, but that one, too, never happened. The terrorist-affiliated CARE, Council on American Islamic Relations, though, said the attack is, quote, just the latest anti-Muslim incident reported since the election of Donald Trump. Going back to one day after the election, Alicia Long, student at Bowling Green State University, or BGSU, in Ohio, claimed, what else, white males wearing Trump shirts threw rocks at her and hurled racial slurs. The incident sparked a rage on campus. The university hosted a town hall, and Long made it all up. On election night, Canadian Chris Ball said he was beaten by anti-gay Trump supporters in Santa Monica. His friend shared a photo on socialist media where Ngo says, hey, note the immaculate watch. Police, though, say he never filed a report and didn't bother to go to any of the hospitals in the area. Which brings us to Charlotte, April 2017, when Curtis Flournoy set an immigrant business on fire and left a note saying, quote, Trump is our nation builder for white America. When the closed-circuit TV footage showed that the perpetrator was, in fact, black, some sites said it was a white Trump supporter in disguise. That from the Charlotte Observer. Hey, folks, I know. Maybe it was Governor Northam, Democrat from Virginia. November 2016, students at Williams College dumped fake blood on campus and wrote AM KKK kill. Campus police notified the FBI and state police, and investigation actually found that perpetrators did it themselves to, quote, bring attention to the effects of the presidential election. Are you starting to see kind of a consistent pattern here? Finally, there's November 2016, Chicago, when Taylor Volk, a bisexual student at NPU, said she received hateful pro-Trump, anti-gay messages, quote, this is a countrywide epidemic all of a sudden, she said at the time. You know what? That may be one of the only true things in this, folks. It's just not for the reason that the false flag hoaxers are pushing. The investigation, say it with me, discovered that, imagine this, yes, you know it, she fabricated the story. I'll say it this way. It's hard to know whether these people learned it from the waste-stream media, or the waste-stream media has just taken their cues from the same, well, anti-scriptural, anti-constitutional, anti-biblical, you name it, but at least it's consistent, adversarial to truth, etc., deep state leadership. Well, folks, at this point, I got about 2 minutes of show left, but not quite 2 minutes before I have to get the show up before the deadline to get it played on the radio. I got a pretty good excuse, though. Right as I was finishing that last segment, quite a while ago now, I got an urgent call saying that one of our two female goats that was very close to delivering baby goats, a.k.a. kids, was there. So I ran downstairs, put on my boots, and headed out to the pen. And we have two new additions to the farmstead here, a doe and a billy, a little boy and a little girl, and we're thankful for that. These are the first that we've ever had, but it does mean this show will be just a teeny bit short. So have a blessed day. Thanks for being with us, and Shabbat Shalom.